Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been declined.
Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Two weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. It is so good to be live and back in the saddle. We are broadcasting from the Log Mahal in Payson, Arizona for this Saturday, March 13th. And I am so excited. The sun is shining. It is a great day. And we have an incredible show in store for you. Thank you so much for joining us. For those who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. We broadcast Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And every Wednesday, we do a midweek update for 30 minutes at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And this week, like every other, we have fabulous guests. As always, we will be checking in just a few more times with our Unlock Your Wealth protege, famous NASCAR race car driver Stephen Light, and see how he is doing along his road to financial independence. For those of you who are new to the program, we have been working with him doing financial coaching as he struggles through this season. He doesn't have a full-time ride in the NASCAR Nationwide Series, and he has been in pursuit of a sponsor, but, you know, those who make a lot of money tend to spend a lot of money, too, and without that money coming in, he's had to make some tough choices, and we've been right there with him to help him on his path, to guide him in the right direction. As you know, he is just the tender age of 23, old enough to screw up, but also young enough to make it. So we'll be checking in with him in our second hour to see how well he is doing along his path to financial independence, as well as our nuts and bolts for this week's key. I can't believe it. We're at 11. Forget the perfection principle. We just have two more to go. And then the season will start all over in a few weeks. I can't believe it. We're almost through the first financial quarter of this year. It seems like just yesterday I was celebrating New Year's, and now all of a sudden we're through a financial quarter. So how have you been doing, for those of you who are regular listeners? Has the road been easy? Has it been difficult? How would you like to have some free financial coaching? If you just simply write in and tell us how your path to financial independence has been going as you've been learning with each key each week, and you could possibly be the recipient of financial coaching. Plus, we may also use you and your story live on the air next season. You can become an Unlock Your Wealth protege too, simply by sharing your trials and tribulations along your path to financial independence and how the Keys to Riches and the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation and our radio show broadcast has helped you get there. Simply send us an email at freecoaching F-R-E-E, our favorite four-letter word, free coaching, C-O-A-C-H-I-N-G, at unlockyourwealth.com, free coaching at unlockyourwealth.com, or stop by our website and sign up for our members-only section. And as soon as we roll out our new website with our free membership, you can not only be a part of that, but in the space provided, tell us about your financial trials and tribulations along the path of financial independence, and you could possibly be selected. So you could do it one of two ways. Send us an email at freecoaching@unlockyourwealth.com, or you could also submit it on our members-only show page. There's a little box to add your comments, so please do so. Tell us your story, and you could possibly win fabulous prizes. In addition to all of that great stuff that we have going on in our second hour, our first hour brings us our regularly scheduled segments with Minutes on Your Money and our Millionaire Minute. Karen is on vacation with her mama, and she's out having a good time. So no news by the number. So let's just assume that the stock market was closed last week, so we don't have to worry about what we missed. And she will be joining us again back in the saddle next week to be able to let us in on how our stock market investments are going. In her stead, we have the illustrious, ever popular, wise, and attractive Kristen Reed joining us. She is producing our show today as well as moderating our chat room. So if you have something to say or comments, there are questions about what's going on today's radio broadcast, please pop into our chat room from our show page on Blog Talk Radio and submit your comments. And say hi to Kristen and let her know that she is doing just a fabulous job. So, anyhow, just give her a little heads up in the chat room and say hi. Kristen works at both the foundation and our real estate company, and she is pinch hitting for Karen. As we know, I am not talented enough to talk and chat in the chat room at the same time. So we have Kristen Reed sitting in for Karen Gurm today. Our Investor's Edge guest, I'm so excited to talk to you about. We're going to have Bill Barnett on today. He is a best-selling author and real estate investor, and he's going to talk to us about a two-year-old HUD law that is actually hurting, not helping, the real estate investor under the guise that Obama is here to save us all from ourselves because clearly we have no idea what we're doing. So in that vein, we are going to have a nice little chat with Bill today. I'm so excited to have him on the broadcast. But first, how would you like some Minutes on Your Money? As we talked on Wednesday, I had some interesting articles for today. How about old banks, new lending tricks? From Jessica Silver Greenberg at Businessweek, she says, lenders have not sworn off risky financial products, and in fact, they've come up with a slew of new ones. She said it didn't take long. The economy hasn't yet recovered from the implosion of risky investments that led to our worst recession in decades, and already some of the world's biggest banks are peddling a new generation of dicey products to corporations, consumers, and you, our real estate investors. In recent months, such big banks as Bank of America, Citigroup, JPMorgan Chase have rolled out newfangled corporate credit lines tied to complicated and volatile derivatives. Others, including Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank, I didn't even know they were still around, they are offering payday loan programs aimed at cash-strapped consumers. Still, others are marketing new, potentially risky, structured notes to small investors. Isn't that lovely? So we thought we had to go to the challenging side of town in order to get a payday loan. But no, now our regular traditional banking institutions have decided to stop disguising themselves in questionable areas of town with payday loan center names, And instead, they're just bringing all that business right in-house. How fabulous. Anyway, there's no indication that the loans or instruments are doomed to fail. Yeah. But if the economy keeps moving toward recovery, as many measures suggest, the new products might well work out for buyers and sellers alike. However, it's another scenario that worries regulators, lawmakers, and consumer advocates. The banks, once again, are making dangerous loans to borrowers who cannot afford to repay them and selling toxic instruments to investors who don't understand the risks, and all of those items could cause blow-ups in the banking sector and weigh heavily on the economy. CDS-linked corporate credit lines, some of Wall Street's latest innovations, give reasons for pause. Okay? Consider a trend in the business loans where lenders typically tie corporate credit lines to short-term interest rates. But now, Citi, J.P. Morgan, Chase, and B of A, among some others, are linking credit lines to short-term rates and credit default swaps. The volatile and complicated derivatives that are supposed to act as quote-unquote insurance by paying off the owners if a company defaults on its debt. J.P. Morgan, B of A, and Citi all declined to comment. Gee, I wonder why. In these new arrangements, when the price of the credit default swaps rise, generally a sign that the market thinks that the company's health is deteriorating, the cost of the loan increases too. The result, the weaker company, the higher interest rate, higher payment, actually hurts the company further. Lenders stress that these new products give them extra protection against default. But for companies, the opposite may be true. Managers now must deal with two layers of volatility. First, the short-term interest rate and the credit default swap, whose prices can spike for reasons outside their control. It's not a good thing. Making matters more difficult for corporate borrowers are high fees. Banks are raising their rates for credit lines across the board. But with this newfangled credit default swap-based credit line, costs way outweigh the old lines. FedEx, for example, could end up paying $1.9 to $3.5 million a month, if it decides to tap a new credit line from J.P. Morgan or Bank of America. On its previous lines with those, FedEx would have only paid about $540,000. So answer me this, or like I like to quote from Batman, riddle me this, Joker. How on earth is charging more for the same thing when someone has a quality credit history with that bank effective? How does that further the bank's relationship with that customer? So now, as soon as this customer can get out of the debt, if they have to borrow it to begin with on this new CDS swappy deal, they're actually going to have to take and find another bank. I mean, that's what I would be doing if I had an account of that magnitude with a lender, and then they decided to tell me that I'm a credit risk and they're going to raise my rates. That's absolutely ridiculous. Why would I stay with that bank? Banks are going to lose a lot of customers, and the real winners aren't going to be these big banks. It's going to be these smaller community banks that weathered the storm, that didn't do the crappy loans, that have solid in the black balance sheets. They're going to be the ones that benefit. Because these big players are going to take their money elsewhere. And I don't blame them. Let me tell you about some other stuff here. The lenders stress that these new products give them this extra protection. yet many companies have little alternatives. But with corporate credit remaining tight, banks are increasingly steering borrowers to these crappy CDS-linked loans. All told, lenders have handed out nearly $40 billion worth of this garbage this year, 70% more in total credit lines have been extended to borrowers in fairly good standing, and that's up 14% from 2 years ago. FedEx, UPS, Hewlett-Packard, and Toyota Motor Credit have all taken the plunge. One of them, UPS, spoke up and said it really wasn't our idea. The banks pulled back from offering set rates, so they couldn't go and get a specific interest rate for a short period of time. And one day we'll talk about just the banks and how they work and how interest rates get dealt to you, the retail customer, and how it's different from what the commercial people borrow and what big companies versus little companies get. I think we should do a whole show on banking because so many people have no clue as to how it all trickles down to us, the individuals, and our personal savings and checking accounts. Here's my concern. How about these crazy big banks offering payday loans? It was one thing I felt when they closed all of their banks in what we would call high crime areas or low income neighborhoods because they weren't getting the deposits and they were always at risk for robbery, so they closed these down. And as an alternative, many of these big banks, under the name of some payday loan company, has provided limited financial services at very high interest rates. So that was like one thing. Okay, so now we're targeting the poorest sector of our economy and giving them punitive financial products instead of getting them to the bigger banks where everybody else can actually have access to quality bank products. However, guess what? Big banks have now brought this in-house. At the other end of the borrower spectrum, big banks are entering another controversial arena, payday loans, whose interest rates can run as high as 400%. How does that make sense? Historically, the market has been dominated by small non-bank lenders, which mainly operate in poor urban centers and offer customers an advance on their paychecks. But big lenders, Fifth Third and U.S. Bancorp, started offering the payday loans, and Wells Fargo continues to add to its payday loan program, which it started in 1994. More big banks are getting into this marketplace, just as a recent flurry of usury laws have crippled some of the smaller players. In the past, lawmakers in 15 states have capped interest rates on short-term loans or kicked out payday loan lenders altogether. The state of Ohio, for example, has imposed a 28% rate limit. But thanks to interstate commerce rules, nationally chartered banks don't have to follow local rules. So after Ohio limited rates, Cincinnati-based Fifth Third, which has 400 branches in the state but also operates in 11 others, introduced its early access loan with an annual interest rate of 120%. So now these big banks are skirting state laws, says Kathleen Day of Advocacy Group Center for Responsible Lending. And a spokeswoman for Fifth Third says, our early access product fully complies with federal regulations and applicable state regulations. Yeah, okay. So lenders argue that they're offering a valuable service for those who need emergency cash. How about maybe not buying that big screen TV and saving that money instead so we don't have to take these payday loans? If the car breaks and you can't afford to fix it, ride a bike, take the bus, or like I had to do for a while, the Rubber Soul Express. Yes, walking doesn't kill anybody and actually creates better health. So now, not only are you saving money on the commute, but you are also lowering your health insurance premiums at the same time. National regulators are taking notice, however, and the Office of Thrift Supervision, that fabulous regulator that just happened to look the other way during all of this crappy mortgage lending. Now they're going to be in charge saying they're looking into two institutions that are offering the high interest rate loans. We need to make sure there's no predatory lending and then also ensures that there are no risks to the institution, says an Office of Thrift Supervision spokesman. Yeah. Okay, that's just lovely. All right. Derivatives for small investors. On the investing front, too, Wall Street firms are embracing more risk. Big brokerage houses, including Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney, and UBS, are selling forms of what they call, quote-unquote, structured notes. It's a type of debt interest. Wall Street sold $15 billion of these products in their second quarter last year, up 13 from the first quarter, according to structuredretailproducts.com. Some of the new notes have a minimum investment of only $1,000. So now the people that should be saving their money and investing in quality long-term investments like real estate or their IRAs, structured notes are essentially derivatives for smaller investors. Some people they may make sense for. Again, some. And that would not be the great unwashed. These are savvy investors. Basic structured notes let buyers benefit from the growth in a stock or bond or currency price while offering some degree of loss protection. But many of the latest iterations of these highly complex notes may not compensate for all that risk. Buyers have to have financial experience to be able to evaluate the risks, says Gary Goldschul, general counsel for the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which is the securities industry's self-governing organization. Yeah, they're doing a fabulous job too. You know, folks, let me just make a comment. It is not that we do not have quality control in place. It's not that we don't have the necessary regulation and punitive actions for those who cross the line. The challenge that we have is that we're putting crappy, morally bankrupt, unethical people at the helm of these government offices, and they're paid to look the other way. So that is our problem. That is what happened to our mortgage industry. It wasn't greedy people trying to keep up with the Joneses, trying to buy a bigger house than they could afford, forging bank statements. It's not just the greedy loan officer that wanted to help him with his Photoshop skills in creating the false documents. It's not about the underwriters who felt pinned against the wall that said, well, if I don't underwrite this loan, somebody else will, and I might as well make the money on it. This is about the regulators allowing this to continue. That's what this is about. So anyway, these fabulous new debt instruments offer attractive rates, guaranteeing sometimes almost double-digit returns for the first couple of years. But when the teaser rates go away, investors face huge potential losses over the life of the instrument, up to 15 years, some of these products go. A Morgan Stanley spokeswoman says services from this firm cover a broad range of products for retail and ultra-high net worth clients, including structured products, and offers training to financial advisors to assist them in making suitability determinations. And UBS, of course, declined to comment. So, anyway, that's just lovely. So, that's what the banks are trying to do. Same old banks, but now they got new products up their sleeve to hoodwink you out of your cash. So, the one that concerns me most are those payday loans coming into the big banks. That just encourages us to not manage our money well. If the money wasn't available, we'd be forced to create financial alternatives for ourselves. Now we don't have to. If we don't have to wait till payday, we don't have to learn how to sacrifice or give up something because we made a mistake somewhere else. All right, enough of that. How about something positive? Million-dollar businesses you've never heard of. Miriam Marcus from Forbes says seven figures, top lines abound, but not in the most obvious of places. Best friends Adrian Salamunovic and Nazim Ahmed weren't looking for the next million-dollar ideas. They were just two guys hanging out on a Friday night enjoying a good bottle of wine when the light bulb went on. Ahmed worked for Bio-Rad, which markets DNA imaging equipment, and Salamunovic noticed that Bio-Rad's brochure on the table, and to his untrained eye, the images looked like art. It turned out that others saw it that way, too. Smelling opportunity in 2005, the twosome plunked down $2,000 in savings for initial prints and the website to feature their work. They outsourced DNA imaging to a DNA extraction lab in Montreal. Working out of Ahmed's apartment, they sold a few prints to family and friends. As the work caught on, they were invited to showcase at an Absolute Vodka-sponsored party in Ottawa's Soho neighborhood. The new company, called DNA 11, sold $40,000 worth of art in the first month. An 8x10 mini DNA portrait goes for $200, while a 36x54 wool canvas garners $1,300. The Museum of Modern Art features DNA 11 art in its museum stores in New York and Tokyo, and the company's revenue in 2008? How about a cool $1.5 million? Have you ever had a nutty idea for a business? It just might work. For inspiration and a few chuckles, the author went looking for small companies that pulled in at least $1 million in annual revenue in unusual, unexpected ways. If you look hard enough, they are in legion. So before you toss that nutty idea aside, check out some entrepreneurs who didn't. Here are a couple of them. Fairy Tales Hair Care. Risa Barish is a 43-year-old entrepreneur, sir. She has head lice prevention shampoos and conditioners. She started in '99 with $1,000. Her revenue in 2008... how about $6 million? Business ideas come from anyone, anywhere, anytime. Risa, a 33-year-old stand-up comic, heard her then-fiancé's cousin, you know how you have that, you know, third cousin twice removed, all of that, about a rash of head lice cases in his Hewlett, New York-based children's salon. After doing some research and a lot of chatting with relatives in Israel where head lice was a big problem, she hit upon an organic preventative shampoo that is opposed to the chemical-based products that are applied only after you have a louse that's taken up residence. Her big break came one morning while watching the Rosie O'Donnell show, and Rosie was lamenting on her own children's lice outbreak. She wrote a letter and, in the voice of a fellow well-known comic, walked over to the NBC studio and told the security guard she was delivering some hair products for O'Donnell's kids. The next day, Fairy Tale Hair Care... Rosemary's Repel Shampoo was the talk of the show. How about number two, the Fierro Store? Matthew Hartzog, 32, has a parts and accessories store for the Pontiac Fierro. His startup costs $5,000. His revenue, $2.3 million. He spent his teenage summers in school working for his dad's automobile company. And as you know, the Fierro doesn't exist anymore, but there are aficionados of those, what they used to call rolling coffins back in the day. And so what they did was he just created a parts store out of it by buying old ones. So how about your cell phone company's dirty little secret? This article is part of the Financially Fit series from David Goldman at Yahoo Finance. Mobile phone companies have been lauded for slashing the cost of unlimited voice plans, but many wireless customers' monthly bills are actually going to get a bit more expensive. Last month, both Verizon and AT&T lowered their unlimited plans by $30 to $70 a month. Sprint unveiled a plan that allows unlimited calls to any mobile device for $60 a month. That brought the three biggest mobile carriers' prices closer to their rival T-Mobile, which offers $60 a month unlimited, and in line with a slew of low-cost carriers that offer similar plans for about $40 a month. But as the wireless giants go around touting their low voice prices, data plans costs have quietly been moving higher for some non-smartphone users. It began with Verizon Wireless. Last month, that company began requiring certain non-smartphone customers to subscribe to a data plan that costs at least $10 a month. Mobile experts believe Verizon's move marks the first step in a larger trend to make up for the carrier's lost revenues on the voice calls with the data plans. Smartphone owners are used to paying for an unlimited data plan, with T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T customers doling out the most at about $30 a month. Sprint offers a slightly different service with their 4G network, but also requires smartphone users to subscribe to an unlimited plan. Many customers didn't understand they could use web on their phone, says Brenda Rainey, spokeswoman for Verizon. We hope that people who are reluctant to use data plans because they didn't know it was affordable will now use it now, because previously Verizon offered non-smartphone users two data plans, $10 a month for 25 megs or $20 for up to 75 megabytes. And in January, Verizon eliminated the $20 plan and replaced it with a $30 unlimited plan. 3G multimedia phones, including a wide array of phones ranging from the LV Envy Touch, which has a touchscreen and QWERTY keyboard, to the Motorola Entice, essentially a standard flip phone, but it can also access the mobile web. And other carriers with similar data requirements for non-smartphone devices are going to be cropping up with similar plans, analysts say. They say it's not just about increasing revenue, says analysts. Carriers are banking on the consumer-friendly aspect that phones are more fun and useful with the Internet. Last but not least, would you like discounts in 140 characters max? Again, Kelly B. Grant says sometimes it pays to be a follower. Twitter and Facebook have been a marketing godsend for all kinds of companies, which increasingly are using social media to build customer loyalty with shoppers. Now retailers have begun to tout sales and exclusive discounts to customers who interact with them through these outlets. For example, Banana Republic recently offered shoppers an invitation to an exclusive spring event, as well as a printout coupon for a 30% off a purchase of $100 or more at the event. Of course, the businesses are not simply trying to be nice with such offers. They are subtly trying to shape consumers' perceptions. Developing a social media presence lets companies more effectively manage what customers are saying about their business online by developing a following, says Lynn Mettler, the founder of Step Ahead, a marketing firm in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. They may as well get in on the conversation and offer something to reward the loyal customers. What's more, the scope of the offer can be limited either in selection or time frame. To find freebies, look for businesses located in your area as well as nearby locations of major chains. They have more need of brand recognition and customers than a big-name company, so they are more likely to offer exclusive discounts for followers, Sarah Sunna Dunham, a spokeswoman for Savings.com. To find deals, register for one of the free networking sites and search your favorite companies and brands. Some have coupon-specific feeds or pages that pull all deals in one place. Let me just tell you, as an avid Twitter follower and Foursquare player, I have found some really great deals for some of the places I like to frequent. When they see that I'm going to those places and utilizing their products, or I comment on them, I am always getting retweeted and I'm offered all kinds of incentives. So how about at Dell Outlet 2? Dell's Outlet division regularly posts exclusive online sales. They sell primarily refurbished and open box items, so the selection is limited, but if you want to deal on a computer, that's the way to go. At Office Depot 5, they have their sale and coupon feeds. Recently, up to 40% on your favorite supplies. I like this one for travelers at JetBlue Cheaps 8. JetBlue's weekly feed of Twitter-exclusive deals has new offers every Tuesday, and last-minute fares tend to sell out quickly. Most recently, $29 Buffalo to JFK and back. How about JDV Hotels 11, California's boutique hotel chain Joie de Vivre, offers Twitter Tuesday and Facebook Friday deals. United Airlines also has exclusive Twares, Twitter fares, amid their customer service and policy posts. The Twitter fares are fast-selling, so if you want the D, you got to pay attention to the feed right away. And Banana Republic does a lot with Facebook. Toys R Us also is getting in the Facebook bandwagon. So take a look, and maybe you should reconsider social media. It could be about saving money through social media. And that, my friends, is Minutes on Your Money. We will be back with more of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio coming up right after this.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhall's on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Here I am. Oh, you thought I wouldn't show up? You thought you could take your credit cards, live beyond your means, spend all you want, not budget a plan, and avoid me? I'm your worst nightmare, baby. Do you know who I am? My first name is bad, last name is debt. I promise you, I'm the one that you'll never forget. Cause I
welcome back to the
life
broadcast, everyone.
No bank will deposit your check.
You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We have that ever popular Investor's Edge segment. We are ready for our fabulous interview. I am so excited to talk to you today. We have coming on the show our nationally recognized best-selling real estate author, Bill Barnett, whose book, Are You Dumb Enough to Be Rich? The Amazingly Simple Way to Make Millions in Real Estate. He is going to be joining us here shortly. And he's going to talk to us today about something really exciting that I like his contrarian thinking, and I am so curious by the way he teased us about what he was going to talk about regarding HUD laws and real estate investing. Bill is a full-time real estate investor, and he has been for the last 13 years. For the past 9 of it, he's also been a trainer, speaker, and consultant on real estate investment and real estate investment property. He has been interviewed over 150 times, been quoted in the LA Times, Washington Post, Miami Herald, and now he is going to add to his illustrious list of credentials his appearance here on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Foundation's radio broadcast. Bill, welcome to the show. Bill, are you there? Welcome to the show, Bill. Can you hear me, Bill?
I can.
Ah, outstanding. All right. Had some technical challenges here, so sometimes that's a more regular occurrence than others. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm so glad you decided to join us on a Saturday. I don't know what the weather's like where you are, but it is just marvelous here in Arizona.
Yep. It is in Fort Worth, Texas, and it is gorgeous and about 75 degrees. And you bet. Glad to be here, Heather. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. So tell me, how did you get involved in real estate?
Well, that's a loaded question that could take a whole show by itself. But I came from an investment banking background. I spent 10 years in investment banking. Started out in Merrill Lynch, ended up in California and L.A., managing a pretty significant portfolio for a bank out there. And some guys that I had known said, hey, let's go start a boutique investment banking firm in Fort Worth, which we did. And we built that company for 5 years. And so on our what was my 10th anniversary in the business, fifth year with that, with our own partnership, I apparently had said something to one of my partners that offended him, and we had a normal meeting, which was just something we did every week, and I walked in and sat out at the conference table. Here's this file folder there. I open it up, and there's a check in it with my name on it, a pretty good size check, and I was like, hey, can we do a deal that I'm unaware of? And my partner said, yes, we did. We're buying you out. We don't want to be your partner any longer. You got till 5 o'clock. Clean your desk out.
You're like, ouch.
So, you know, for the next few months, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do when I grow up. And one night I'm watching TV way too late because I wasn't sleeping very much. And there was Carlton Sheets. And that's what got me started.
Oh, Carlton.
That was 13 years ago, and it's been the best financial decision I've ever made.
Yes. Wow. Incredible. Well, you know, I always find it interesting how people that have become uber successful in the investment arena usually have had some sort of controversial circumstance, sometimes with or without their influence, like in your case. Many times beyond their control, but we're able to go head forward and try to make a difference with themselves financially, and real estate was the way to go. And I am a big fan of real estate because it's a tangible investment. And
absolutely.
We've enjoyed an incredible ride, and we just, you know, for those who weren't part of the Great Unwashed or those trying to keep up with the Joneses, I think most of us saw what was happening and adjusted our real estate portfolios accordingly and were able to weather the storm. And now, because we had that foresight, have been able to position ourselves for yet again another monster real estate investment gain.
I think we are starting. I used to, you know, a few months ago, I said we're on the verge. I think we've got our first foot in the door for what's going to be a significant run. It may start a little bit slow, but what we're seeing all over the country, Heather, is prices have stabilized. Only a few markets where we're continuing to see decline, and we've got markets that I was in Denver literally last weekend buying property with a student, and the prices there are locking in. The days on market is shortening up. Same thing in my market, Dallas-Fort Worth. The days on market is getting shorter and shorter. Now, a little of that is the fact of the season we're getting into, but that's not all of it. I think we're starting to see a really an underlying bed of stability come back into the market.
Well, that's good. You know, I don't know about your neck of the woods, but here in Arizona, we have pending legislation where a lot of big banks who are getting just crushed with all of these foreclosures are lobbying the legislature because here, you know, we have, if it's primary residence, 2.5 acres or less, you know, you can not have any recourse on a foreclosure, and that debt's forgiven. You write it off on your taxes, no question. You do take that hit, but you are not financially responsible for that loan or for that deficiency. They don't do deficiency judgments here. However, banks are becoming a little bit more cunning, and they're trying to augment that at our state legislature level here to say, well, if yes, you don't have recourse if it is a primary residence, 2.5 acres or less, up to a duplex, purchase money. If you have a home equity line of credit, if you've refinanced or have a second mortgage, all bets are off. And they're going to come after you for that difference. Have you seen anything like that pending in your state legislature?
Well, not only is it coming up here, but that is coming up across the board. We're seeing that in about, I don't know, 28, 29 states right now. I just, in the last couple of weeks, spent some time with a gentleman, a real estate attorney here in town that I do a lot of work with, but he taught real estate law at Southern Methodist University for 23 years. He said, Bill, right now is the single most dangerous time that we've ever seen for private ownership of land and homes in America. What the government is doing and what the banks are trying to do is take all this and put it so that we are in jeopardy of losing our right to own property. And all of these little pieces, like the going after the deficiency judgment, in one form or another, all these little pieces are part of a bigger, scary thing in our government. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of deficiency judgment come about. And you know, one of the things in going through some of that with students is, like I was working with a student in Florida, they found out that the bank could actually, even though they didn't come after them, could sell off that deficiency. With up to 5 years, they could sell it off, and the buyer had up to 20 years to come back and try to collect.
Wow.
And that's scary.
That is.
It is crazy right now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, in our marketplace, and the fever started right around Thanksgiving, we had a new listing for a rental in an area town, one of our suburbs called Gilbert, Arizona.
Yep, I was in Gilbert about a month ago.
Yeah, well, what we're seeing, and we had a flood of sign calls. We wound up, you know, leasing up that property, so we don't have any more listings in that area, so our phones haven't been ringing as much. But the millisecond that sign went in, we were getting calls of people who have the ability to service their current debt on their home. They manage their money effectively, and they are choosing to walk away because they're a couple hundred grand underwater and rent for a few years before they buy again.
Yep.
And because it's cheaper for them in the same neighborhood to rent. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about this. I'm on two sides of the fence at the same time about this. Now, on one side, you know, I am championing them for being able to get outside of themselves because people are so emotionally attached to their primary residence. This is where my kids were born. I grew up here, blah, 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 you know, all of this stuff. So I champion them for being able to dissociate their emotions to make a financially smart move. But then on the other side of the fence, I'm like, hey, you know what? When we profited in the real estate market and when we profited in the stock market, we didn't give that money back. So when we gamble and lose, why don't we have to pay the piper also? And it angers me that a lot of people who were trying to keep up with the Joneses that overbought beyond their means, they used inappropriate investment instruments like adjustable rate mortgages or those fixed adjustables where they were fixed for a brief period of time, and they didn't read their escalation clauses. They didn't see what their first adjustment could go to the max cap on it, and so that they could go from 5 to 11% in one payment. And, you know, because they just chose not to accept that for whatever reason, because they were in the instant gratification mode, that, you know, why don't they have to pay, you know, the same piper, so to speak? You know, that's the one thing that's getting me angry. So I'm not so upset about the banks wanting to go after these deficiency judgments in that respect. What I am upset about is the government telling me that they're going to lower my quality of property ownership when it's my right as an American to own property here, you know, free of government encumbrances outside of the taxes that I pay, that they're going to change my quality of ownership because they don't think that I'm smart enough or capable enough to manage that effectively. Yet it was their exact regulators. Not that we didn't have laws in place, not that we didn't have oversight for these industries, but they were told to look the other way. And because they goofed up the works, I, as an individual with rights to home ownership and the land ownership, am now going to have to suffer for their negligence, not mine.
And it's crazy. You know, I stress to students, and I want to stress to our listeners this, as hard as I possibly can, you have got to get out and vote. This is a most incredibly important year that likely you and I have ever seen in our life, and most of our listeners, from a voting standpoint, we have got to be out there saying, hey, you know what, we're going to put fiscally responsible politicians in place. I don't care where they're from. I don't care what party they are. As long as they're fiscally responsible, because we don't have any of that, and this is how it comes back to bite all of us, is that things like what are happening in the banks and what's happening with land ownership, and you are absolutely right. We have to protect. This is one of the basic freedoms as Americans that separate us from every other nation out there is the right to own property. And, folks, you got to go vote and put people in that understand that you have basic rights and freedoms. And one of those primary is the right to buy and sell property. And, you know, the seller finance laws that HUD changed and that everybody's talking about now actually got changed in April of 2008 and go into effect across the board now. And it's just crazy that, you know, this is not where the problems have been with people that were doing seller financing, yet the government saw and the banks saw, hey, you know what, it's a decent dollar amount when you look at it on a national picture, so let's go get that. And, you know, it's just the regulation that we are going through as real estate investors and just as Americans that own property is getting kind of crazy.
Yeah, you know, I think that because, you know, there's all of these appropriations and mandates without funding to support these crazy, idiotic things, that the government was never supposed to be there to take care of us. But now they're trying to look for other ways to make money off us. So let's talk about this HUD law that so many people probably haven't really heard about or understood, but those of us in the industry were paying attention to when it came down the pipe.
But a new
Are you there? Hello? Hello, Bill? Nuts. We lost him. Hopefully Bill will give us a call back. And what I'm going to do while we're waiting for him is I am going to share with you one of our favorite returning guests, Johnny Diaz. And he is our financial literacy. Oh, I think we got him back. Anyhow, he is our financial literacy rap star. And a little later in the broadcast, I'm going to play his song in its entirety, Plan to Buy a House. Oop, we lost him again. So maybe we will get to that song right now. And I want you to pay attention because this song is super important to us. Oop, here we go again. Maybe we got Bill this time. Hang on 1 second. So let's see if we can't get him here.
Yep.
Bill, are you there?
I am so sorry. You know, the wonders of technology.
Yeah.
So in April of 2008, this law got passed by HUD that said if you are involved in seller financing in any form, unless it is your personal residence and that you have lived there 5 of the last 7 years, you must have a mortgage brokerage license to be able to do seller financing. Now, here's how crazy this thing gets. If you and I are talking about doing seller financing, and you've got a house for sale, and maybe the only way I can possibly buy it is with seller financing, and you're going to let a mortgage company even do the seller finance part, but you are simply going to take my application, not write the information down. Me fill it out. Me just hand it to you, Heather, and you put it on the fax. Now you have to be mortgage licensed to be able to do that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And
what they're doing.
Mortgage licenses aren't worth the paper they're printed on.
Well, yeah, and now they're saying that there has to be a new federally mandated law, or excuse me, test for the licensing. And, of course, this is supposed to go into effect in 2 weeks, and nobody's prepared for that. So like most things that anytime the federal government gets into business, it's a complete total mess. This is certainly no exception.
Well, and what are they going to do about all of the existing ones?
Well, it looks like if it's in place already, they're going to grandfather that. Now, that hasn't been specified because the law is so broad and so vague. And, of course, with any law, you really don't know what the law truly says until it's been on the books for years and you have case law, which means there have been court cases, and we don't have any of those yet. So it may be years before we really understand fully what this thing says, but it looks like we're going to have a grandfather on existing seller financing.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just thinking out loud because a friend of mine is did seller financing on a property, and the people that bought it, and shame on them, this is just, it's a little convoluted, and there's all kind of, in my estimation, fraud that went on at the real estate company side of things because they sold it to another real estate agent in the office, and now they're just saying they're going to walk away. They're paid up through April, so they're not in default yet, but they have told the owner that did the seller financing, that they're going to walk away. They did it as a land contract. So now, if they go to sell this home again and they want to opt for the seller financing because they're looking for an income stream.
Sure.
They're not looking for a big chunk of money. So now they're going to have to pay a mortgage lender to set up the financing that's coming, the money's coming from them anyway, or they have
yep.
to have a license in order to do it themselves.
Yep. And the bad part about even if, because I've already checked into this for me personally, because we love seller financing, do a lot of it. And I told my wife as soon as this thing came out, I said, well, now that we're aware of it, then we've got to get this thing going and get it squared away for us personally so that it doesn't affect our business, because seller finance is such a big piece of our business. And I start calling around, well, the test isn't available. Well, what do you mean? You're telling me I have to do this, but the test isn't available, so I can't do it. Well, yeah, that's kind of what we're telling you, but that's the way it is. It's,
yeah.
It's insane. So.
And it takes a while for case law to really tell you how the law operates. And, as an investor myself and a former mortgage lender, I don't have my RI license anymore. But, I used to teach the class for certification, so it's not like I can't go back and get that license. But why would I want to do that?
Yeah, well,
when I already know how to write it, I have a standard note that an attorney crafted for me. I just fill in the blanks and do my thing.
But you're going to have to, or you're going to face penalty if they there's no definition as to what those penalties are. But you're going to face penalty if they quote unquote catch you creating this private seller mortgage without having a license. So. The only thing that you and I can do at the moment, because the law has already been passed, this is the thing that now we're talking to classes, a lot of them didn't understand. It's like, no, we don't have a chance to stop this. This is done. This is already was passed in 08, and they had up until April the 1st of this year the individual states to come back and say, we have passed at our local level a law like the federal model, so we're in good standing. Texas did that quickly, unfortunately for me, but they modeled the federal law and did it right off the bat. And so you look at what we have to do is go back and now try to get people in place from a political standpoint that understand business. And again, I could care less if they're Republican or Democrat, as long as they're a physically conservative person that understands business and understands that our government has little to no place in business, and let the real estate market, which, don't get me started there, because our market, I think, would be significantly further down the road of recovery had we not had all of this intervention.
Yeah, I think that exacerbated the situation versus helped it. Did they ever say, was there any ever commentary, because I never really found the why behind this stupid piece of legislation. What was the why behind it?
Well, one of the things that we're hearing is that the banks and the mortgage companies, the big boys, were able to get their lobbyists to convince some members of Congress that a lot of the problems that happened in the real estate market were because of real estate investors, and this is one way to get them, quote-unquote, under control.
Okay. But, I just don't understand this. I mean, all of that government intervention, and I don't know about your market, but we were overvalued anyway. We were so far off our median home price to median income that we were going to have a bounce anyway, regardless of what the rest of the country was going to do, and regardless
right.
of the fraud and, the looking the other way from the mortgage industry. Like, if you even take those two factors out, we were overvalued to begin with, and it all started just because of a scarcity of inventory that we had here. And that's what spurred it in late 04, early 05, and then that's just what sent our market running to the madness. And I was advising all my clients, not to buy, to hold their positions, because the things were overvalued. And, there were a lot of other agents out there making a ton more money than I was, because I wasn't doing as many deals. I was facilitating sales, but I was not shopping for buyers, and I'm like, don't buy, don't buy. If you want to sell, sell. You're at the peak of the market, but don't reinvest. Go rent somewhere, and I promise you, in a couple of years, this is all going to be better. And I predicted it on my radio show, The Mortgage Crash, in 2004. And I said, mark my words, when people were talking about the real estate bubble, I said, that's not what you got to watch for. I said, it's the mortgage bubble. It'll be more massive and more devastating. Those were my exact words. And some people scoffed at me. My real estate investment clients listened and now are multimillionaires because of the advice that I gave them back then before things got started and out of control, before we hit our scarcity spike in values. And, you know, people keep saying, when are we going to get back to where we were? Arizona should have never been there, so we're not going to go, quote, get back to where we were. What we need to do is create some sort of homeostasis in our marketplace where median home price and median income is stable. But we're going to have a double bounce because of all of these people willingly choosing to walk away from their home. They're willing to let it foreclose. And with all of this pending legislation, they might, you know, and I keep telling them short sale, and they're like, no, 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 I just want to be done with it. And short sale means I have to pay money. And I said, I would rather pay tax on $100,000 that is income, then have to pay $100,000 when the mortgage company gets that deficiency judgment against me and then comes after me because I walked away.
Right. And we're seeing this all over the country, this walk-away mentality. And people, some of them don't, they're obviously, they're not thinking this process through when they go down that path. You know, they're just like, hey, you know, I was dealing with a guy in San Diego that was walking away, and I said, well, what are you going to do? This is your home. He goes, yeah, but, you know, I'm upside down on it. And I'm like, well, are you able to make the payments? He goes, yeah, that's not the problem. The problem is it's not worth the note. I'm like, well, I get that, but it's your home, and you take this short-sighted look like real estate's never going to change, like this is the end. It'll be right here forever. And if there's anything that the history of the real estate market has shown us is that this is a – now, we're not in a normal cycle. This is a cycle that's twice as heavy on the correction that it normally is because we went up for almost 10 years. So it's like, hey, you know, this is a cycle. It's a normal cycle of business. It's a little heavier than what we are used to seeing or a lot heavier, but it's still a cycle, and real estate will be coming back around. Now, for your folks and for our folks – this is the greatest buying opportunity that we're likely to ever see. And when you're looking around, and you know, if you're in Gilbert, Chandler, Scottsdale, wherever right now, and you're looking around at property and seeing the values that you can get today, and there's some great, great buying opportunities out there.
Yeah. So currently, what are you teaching folks that are taking your workshops now, like a brief step-by-step process, you know, like a, do this first, second, third, fourth. What are you sharing with your people in what could be the greatest investment opportunity we'll see?
Well, the first thing I let them know is, look, there's two things that make this business go. And the two things that will always make our business go is money and offers. You got to be out making offers of property or you're never going to get anything. You got to put the money together to pay for it or you're never going to get anything. Now, this is a pretty simple business. It's not easy. Don't ever think I ever say that. It is not. It is not an easy business. It's great rewards, but it is a very straightforward, simple business. Now, what we've got to do is make sure that when we're going out and looking at a fluid market and certainly, we're more fluid now than we've been in quite some time. You take a look at how do we market these properties. Well, right now, the only people that are being approved for purchase are the FHA buyers. And they don't have to be first-timers, but obviously that's a big benefit. And we've still got till the end of April for the tax credit. So we're letting people know, you know, you can still flip property today, but you've got to be in a position, price range, and to make this house stand out, when you go in and rehab it, look, you're going to have to, whether you consider yourself a rehabber or not, you're going to have some good, thorough rehab knowledge because you're going to have to bring these properties, make them current, even if it's just cosmetic, but you got to get them looking good, and you've got to get them in a position where they stand out by themselves from every other property that's out there, because that's the only stuff that's moving right now. That you start looking at median price, and you kind of stay in the sweet spot of the market, about 10% either side of median. And that's where really where our business is right now.
What can people find in your book, Are You Dumb Enough to Be Rich? The Amazing Simple Way to Make Millions in Real Estate.
When they look at the book, Heather, thank you so much for the plug. Yeah, it's always nicer when it comes from you. But when they look at the book, and remind me, I've put together a special offer for all the listeners that can get the book for half price on our website. And they can go to all the bookstores and get it. But then go to Bill Barnett Now, N-O-W, BillBarnettNow.com, and get a special price for the radio listeners at $9.95, and we'll even sign it for them when we send it out. Of course, they can go to Amazon and bookstores and everywhere else. But what they find in the book is step-by-step, and it starts with how you find property, how you build a business plan for your real estate business, how you put funding together for it. It ends with a 120-day action plan that says, here's what I need to do tomorrow. Here's what I need to do next week. Here's what I need to be doing the week after, day by day by day, with activities. And all of those activities are underlying one thing, and that is the key, money and offers. And all those activities push toward making more offers. How do you make the correct offers? And how in the world are you going to pay for this stuff when somebody says yes?
Perfect. Well, give that website again one more time so folks can find it.
Great. It's Bill Barnett, and that's B-A-R-N-E-T-T, Bill Barnett Now, N-O-W, BillBarnettNow.com.
Great. Now, if folks want to participate in some of your seminars and things, is all of that stuff available on your website too?
That's right there on the homepage. And from time to time, we're doing one in a couple of weeks. We do free two-day seminars in the markets that we participate in around the country, and we've got one coming up in March 27th to 28th in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So if anybody's going to find themselves out our way, feel free to come on by. All they got to do is go to the website and say, hey, I'm coming.
Outstanding. And is there a phone number for those who aren't tech-savvy that would like to participate? Is there a number they can call to get involved?
Sure. They can call our nationwide toll-free number, which is 866-663-8688. 866-663-8688.
And always, listeners who are listening to our show that happen to be driving around, that information is always available on our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday to be a part of our show. I'm so excited to have had you on, and so many people are not aware. When I saw your little teaser about the HUD law, and I thought, ooh, somebody knows something about this. And I like when people take the time to peel back the layers to tell people what they really need to know, because you know, you've got real estate agents that are still out there selling properties that never read industry trades. They have no idea
right.
What legislation is going on.
Yeah.
And it takes people like me and you that will peel back the layers, that will stay up late at night reading the laws and extrapolating what it really says and how it really affects us, and telling the truth to people through radio shows, the news, and seminars, because mainstream just isn't picking this stuff up. So I'm grateful for you being so vigilant for us as a genre of real estate investors. So thanks again for being a part of our show today. I'm so grateful you decided to stop by.
Well, Heather, I'd love to do it anytime. And let me just tell you, listeners, you got a great asset here. And, Heather, make sure that if you're a first-time listener, you keep coming back, because you're going to learn some great stuff on the show. And, Heather, thanks for having me on, and let's do this again.
I would love to have you back. Thanks again for stopping by. And all of you, remember to visit his website for an autographed discounted book, which in my estimation, the autograph makes it that much more valuable. So for half price and an autograph, which I always love the autographed books, go visit BillBarnettNow.com, or again, the link is always on our website at UnlockYourWealth.com. We have so much more in store for you for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We've got so much more coming up right after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches right after this. Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S industries.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhall on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Yes, it is that time again for the ever-popular Millionaire Minute. This segment is where we crawl into the minds of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now today. And this is from the One Minute Millionaire, a dollar a day, a minute at a time. No matter your present circumstances, here are four steps to your first $1 million. Number one, first, decide that it is okay for you to become a millionaire. Some people believe that the accumulation of wealth is an unworthy goal. Before you begin your journey to become an enlightened millionaire, search your attitudes to make sure you are willing to create wealth in a way that will support your inner beliefs and values. Number two, practice imagining yourself enjoying an abundant lifestyle. All great fortunes are started in someone's imagination. See yourself living in the home of your dreams, enjoying ideal relationships with friends and loved ones. Imagine the fortune you could create and the good it could do. Imagine yourself contributing to the world through your own unique talents and abilities. Believe it, and you will see it. Number three, spend less than you earn. But how? Pay yourself first. Deduct 10% off the top of your income and deposit it into your investment account. Convert all of your credit cards except to one to debit cards so it is impossible for you to go into debt. Then live on what is left over. Number four, invest the difference. Invest your 10% surplus into investments that can earn at least 10%. A dollar a day invested at 10% interest becomes $1 million in just over 50 years. In other words, anyone can become a millionaire by investing only a dollar a day, 30 bucks a month. If you want to become a millionaire faster, invest more money or find ways to make your money grow at higher rates of return. Simply put, we can all retire rich. You can become a millionaire. It only takes a minute to decide it. It only takes a minute to visualize it. It only takes a minute to save it, and it only takes a minute to invest it. A dollar a day, a minute at a time, you can get there slowly but surely. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you, and imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality, and that is your millionaire minute. I didn't give you the trivia question in the first hour. It slipped my mind. I got so caught up in some of those news stories because I get fire just growing in my belly when I get upset with some of the news and the slants and how they parlay that. So this week's trivia question from the midweek update this week, what business made a college undergraduate a millionaire before he got his degree? There were three of them we talked about. You just name one to win, and you can win things like free financial coaching, credit report review, autographed books from our previous show guests. All you have to do is call in, chat in, or email in to win. If you want to call in, if you think you have the answer, do so at 718-508-9002. Kristen would be happy to take your answer and see if you are this week's winner. In the chat room, you can just chat in and answer the question, and she will let me know what or who you have come up with, and we'll see if you're a winner. Or sometimes the show doesn't yield us an answer, and if you're listening to this on a podcast or through iTunes or an archived broadcast from our unlockyourwealth.com website, you still might be able to win. Just send your answer into trivia at unlockyourwealth.com. Now, we have a question from the chat room, and I am asked, with the number of people that have their credit ratings damaged over the past few years, that lenders are even more inclined to overlook bad credit in the near future. And to overlook your credit, it would have to depend, and I'm going to give kind of a vague answer, but I'm going to give you specific reasons for the vagueness. And it would have to depend on the new type of credit you're applying for. Underwriting guidelines simply say that when it comes to mortgages, if you're applying for an FHA loan, that you need two lines of credit or trade lines that they had to have been open for 24 months with no late. So if you were late and it was more than 24 months ago, a credit explanation letter will help overcome that particular line of credit. Conforming conventional mortgages require four lines of credit, 24 months, no late. And the neat thing about your credit is that while you are in whatever catastrophic event that you are experiencing, tell them that when you overcome that, it shows on your credit, you had good credit, good credit, good credit, good credit. Then you had this little issue. Then you had good credit, good credit, good credit, good credit. So they can see that something happened. Maybe, and this happened to me, my transmission went out on my car, and it cost me $2,000 to get it rebuilt because I couldn't afford a $4,000 new one. And fortunately, because I am so savvy with my knowledge about credit, I was able to negotiate forbearances. But let's say, for example, your lenders are unwilling or you're unable to negotiate those forbearances. If you have a credit explanation letter, go in with your application for credit explaining the catastrophic event, the lender will be able to see that because credit was good, then whoosh, the incident, and then all your credit lines were reestablished and they were flawless after. Now, if you're a slacker and you're lackadaisical and you forget to make payments and you miss a payment here or there, not for any particular reason other than you just are not being vigilant and self-disciplined and responding to your obligations appropriately, remember response ability, our ability to respond, and if we're not responding to our obligations in an appropriate fashion, you are going to have a tougher time. Lenders don't care what everybody else is doing. So, Kevin, thank you for the question. Hopefully, I was able to answer that. Lenders only care what you're doing, regardless of what the movement is or the trend is. Yeah, there are more foreclosures going on now. So as a result of these more foreclosures, if that was your only issue that held up your credit, again, an underwriter can see that as we look at the credit history. And a blip, a catastrophic event that can be explained away is great. You'll overcome most credit issues, and you might have to pay a higher interest rate, but you'll still get that line of credit. However, if you are just slackadaisical in your payment and so you're saying, well, you know, I bought that stuff at Victoria's Secret, but, like, I gained all this weight so I couldn't wear it, and then I tried to take it back and, like, they wouldn't. And I just really felt like I shouldn't have to pay that because, like, I tried to take it back, but I didn't have my receipt or whatever, and they just wouldn't take it back. And so that's why that one went bad. And then, you know, I forgot to do this. And then, you know, I was getting my nails done, and I should have dropped off my payment, but I actually left my payment at, like, the beauty parlor. And so, like, by the time I went back to get my nails done in another, like, 2 weeks, like, my bill was late because I did, like, totally didn't know that I didn't mail it. So that's your issue. You're going to have problems getting new credit. And if that is your issue, you probably shouldn't be applying for any more credit until you manage the credit more effectively that you have now. So hopefully that answered your question. Now, I have a song I want to play for you from Johnny Diaz, our financial literacy rap star. And this kind of falls on the heels of what we were talking about with Bill Barnett, but the message is so clear, and I just love how he explains it, and it's an enjoyable piece of music, so I just wanted to send it over to you guys and play this in its entirety because it is a rap song and it's a story, it takes a little bit, and so when I use it as joiner music, when we come back from commercials, you don't get the whole full effect. So I just wanted to play Johnny Diaz's song in its entirety so you get a drive and a feel and a vibe for what you need to be doing as you plan to buy a home.
Home ownership is one of the most common ways to build wealth. With credit standards tightening more and more, you really have to plan to buy a house. You have to develop a solid plan for saving up, for making sure your credit is in order to achieve the dream of home ownership. Don't procrastinate. Don't waste time. Plan, people, then carry out the plan. Procrastination's your opponent, folks, you have to get on it. Gotta plan for tomorrow, can't just live for the moment. Let me be your proponent to get this wealth if you want it. But first, answer the question, do you rent it or own it? If you rentin', then you missing a crucial component to build wealth with a home. Ain't no need to be homeless if you plan to buy a house. One day you will buy it. If people say that you can't, tell them haters be quiet. Make plans to get a home, and you gonna get it. But you have to get ready, you must establish your credit. Hey, I got a couple questions for the people today. Are you a owner or a renter in the place that you stay? Are you building equity every year that you in it? Or are you building nothing every year that you rent it? When your place appreciates, do you build wealth? Or does the place that you live belong to somebody else? Now take time to think about where you live at. Now tell me, can you use it to lower your taxes? It's up to you to decide to rent or buy. But I prefer buying, and I tell you why. When you buy, you build equity, eventually own it. When you rent, you build nothing, you're essentially homeless. Procrastination's your opponent, folks, you have to get on it. Gotta plan for tomorrow, can't just live for the moment. Let me be your proponent to get this wealth if you want it. But first, answer this question, do you rent it or own it? If you rent, then you're missing a crucial component to build wealth with a home. Ain't no need to be homeless if you plan to buy a house. One day you will buy it. If people say that you can't, tell them haters be quiet. Consider the landlord, consider the tenant, not consider the disadvantages you have when you're renting. They call the landlord because they the lord of your land, and they got all sorts of power in the palm of their hand to raise rates and dictate what you can and can't do. Because you renting from them, they ain't renting from you. And since you renting from them, you better pay them on time. You might even get evicted if you step out of line. And if they do raise your rates, don't expect them to drop it. If you tell them people place up, there goes your deposit. Want to paint a room different, they ain't your decision. Better go to the lord of the land and that permission. Procrastination's your opponent, folks, you have to get on it. Gotta plan for tomorrow, can't just live for the moment. Let me be your proponent to get this wealth if you want it. But first, answer this question, do you rent it or own it? If you're renting, then you're missing a crucial component to build wealth with a home. Ain't no need to be homeless if you plan to buy a house. One day you will buy it. If people say that you can't, tell them haters be quiet. Let me tell you some facts, just in case you don't ask. Owning usually beats renting, and it's rarely a match. Owning your own home is a heck of a goal. You're the lord of your own land, and you're in control. You don't have to ask permission to change your place. Don't have to worry about the landlord changing your rate. And every payment you make helps you pay off your loan. Cause you're living in a home you'll eventually own. Deduct property taxes and interest expense. Lower your tax bill in ways you can when you rent. If renters would take a look at the money they spent over all of the years, they still own 0% of the place they've been living. After all they've been given, ought to make them mad enough to come to a decision to go to their landlord and tell them out loud, I'm working to stop renting and get me a house. Procrastination's my opponent, but I'm about to get on it. I'm gonna plan for tomorrow, not just live for the moment. I got to use my proponent to get this wealth cause I want it. Right now, I'm just renting, but I'm working to own it. I know this causes me to miss a crucial component to build wealth with a home. Look, I don't wanna be homeless, so I'm planning to get a house, and one day I'll buy. For you people saying I can't, please, haters, be quiet.
Wow, I wonder what happened to that. Well, anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. I don't know where it went, but anyway, we have so much more ground to cover and not that much time to do it, so why don't we get started? Hold on. Let's see. Let's see where Steven is here. And check in with our Unlock Your Wealth protege. I'm trying to find him. Where is that man? Well, this week's key in our Keys to Riches series is forget the perfection principle. And we have come so far in our keys. Now, for those of you who are kind of joining us for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we have come so far, if you think about it. First, we had acceptance and affirmation. We decided either we didn't know anything about money and we needed to get some skills while we're starting out financially, or maybe we have goofed up and made a mistake and we've realized that we can't keep continuing along that path and that now we need to get on some sort of plan because what we're doing now clearly isn't working. And now that we know that it's not working, we can then take and make measures to correct it. But first, we must accept our mistakes. And then we create affirmations to help give us the strength to accomplish that, because maybe, just maybe, we haven't been so confident about our skills. And so we're going to retrain our brain to figure out what it is that we need to be doing to motivate ourselves, to make us feel like we are capable and we are worthy, that these goals are worthy of us pursuing because we're the most important person in our world. We are. And what we know is that nobody else is going to take care of us like we will. So after that, we decided to start assessing our finances, and our next key was assessment, take action, make assessment. And so we started an organic assessment of how we manage our money. Then after that, we went and we started with our dreams with deadlines. And our dreams with deadlines was simply figuring out what we wanted and then planning backwards to make it all happen. And then we hoped for the best but planned for the worst. And so now while we were focusing on our game plan, plan A, we made sure that we were covered with plan B. We also learned that knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. And we said to ourselves, okay, I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And what I don't know, I'm either A, going to learn, or B, delegate it to a professional. So then we learned how to take our emotions out of the picture. And we specifically did this because we are so emotionally engaged to the money that we make. And therefore, we can justify to no end a want into a need because we're so emotionally engaged, we feel like we deserve it, we feel entitled, and then the media reinforces that. So we learn how to dissociate our emotions when it comes to spending. And we're objective as if we were looking at somebody else's budget to tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing with their money. But we keep our passions in perspective. So we want to be emotional and excited about making money, but we want to be conservative when it comes to spending money. Then we actually broke the budget because we don't budget here. Budgeting is like dieting. It's something you go on to and off of. And instead, we learned how to create a healthy savings and spending plan. So now that we got all of our ducks in a row, we learned not to make seasonal exceptions because that happens. Because while we can be super strong and powerful when it comes to spending our money and we've saved accordingly, but we get these special occasions that kind of can derail us. So we learned how to use the rules of etiquette to reinforce our financial stability by not having to go in debt just because you want to recognize somebody. We learned how manners and proper etiquette can actually go further than some particular financial occurrence for someone else. And then after that, we learned how great it is to create our credit. And after we created credit, we learned how to either create or fix our credit and how we can restructure our debt so we can get the right or ideal profile for remembering real estate. And when we remember real estate, we learn that all of our financial planning goes to create the balance for us to become savvy real estate investors, first by going from renter to homeowner, then from homeowner to real estate investor. And then that brings us to this week's key. All of that stuff has gone on. We've come so far. We've been at it almost 3 months. And then what happens? We fall off the wagon. We make a mistake. We go out and do exactly what we've tried not to do for so long. And we hit a bump in the road. And so that's where this week's key comes in, to forget the perfection principle. Because people make mistakes. But it's not an all or nothing thing. We just, when we fall from the horse, we just need to get back in the saddle and ride some more. Let's check in.
It's time to check in with our Unlock Your Wealth protege this week. We have famous NASCAR race car driver Stephen Light joining us on this Forget the Perfection Principle Day. Stephen, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Heather. How's it going?
It's moving along. I can't believe we're almost through with the process here. We have come so far. And how are things going for you with this process? What are you thinking so far?
Well, I'm definitely looking back and where we started. One, it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but two, I can definitely see a big change starting to take place. As, you know, especially with things where maybe I was having some trouble before getting my money situated or worrying about certain things. When, how am I going to pay this? How am I going to do that? And now I seem to have things more in line, more ready to go when those situations come up, and my process and how I get prepared for them since it seems to be getting a lot better.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And are you using the strength from that accountability process that we worked on last week?
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely helped a lot. The more situations are coming up now. I'm trying to put myself out there and put more of the pressure and focus on myself getting it done rather than other people. And seems to be helping.
Oh, great. Since this week's key is Forget the Perfection Principle, and this is all about our progress on the process. And sometimes folks get fixated in, oh, my gosh, I made this plan, and I started, and I was doing really, really good, and then, like, I just had a weak moment, and I totally got derailed, and now all hope is lost. And this key is designed to illustrate that this is not about the destination. It's about the journey. And sometimes, through no fault of our own, things happen to us. Catastrophic events beset us. The loss of an income-producing spouse, the care of an indigent parent, or the unexpected birth of a new child can all kind of derail us. And it doesn't have to be a permanent derailment. We can just maybe make a detour. That's okay. So our financial plan is always going to be in motion. We're going to learn more about that next week. But what we need to focus on is if we make a mistake, that we don't need to beat ourselves up about it. So I was wondering, over the last 10 weeks, as you've been going through this process, Have you made any mistakes? And maybe we just say, name one mistake that you've made in the last 10 weeks of coaching as we've been going through this process.
I'd say probably a couple times I've caught myself making a few mistakes. I know one time in particular, there was this one week where I promised myself that I would probably only eat out two or three times that week. And the rest of the time at home, save some money. And by Saturday came, I had already ate out 5 times and didn't think about it until Saturday. Didn't even realize I'd done it, and then when it happened, I was like, oh, see, that's not what you're supposed to do. I remember being mad at myself for it. And the fact that I'm more aware of that stuff, though, alone, even when I made that mistake, at least I was, the only thing I was happy about was the fact that I realized that and tried even harder the following week to stick to that.
So the process is working. So you're catching yourself now as opposed to just letting it go down the road?
Yes, I'm definitely seeing these things happen now and taking myself accountable for them and really focused on making them better.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about in relation to the goals that we established? Now, because you're able to catch yourself, when you identified that, uh-oh, I've made a mistake, how did you feel at that moment?
Well, I kind of felt a little, you know, I don't want to say embarrassed, but and I don't want to say upset at myself because I think that's a little too far. Almost like I could do better than that. You know, I know I could do better than that, and I should have been able to do it right the first time and not make that mistake. And I think that's what's helped me more than anything is when I do make these mistakes, it's like, okay, getting angry at myself helps me do it next time. When that opportunity comes to do it wrong, I don't do it wrong the next time, I do it right. Because I remember back to when I was upset at myself for not doing it the way I was supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I'm glad that you're identifying those things, because here's the challenge that most people have, and that's what makes the forget the perfection principle key so important.
When we think about what's going on, and, you know, I mean, life happens, and you know, sometimes we throw pity parties when we make a mistake and we beat ourselves up for it, but we can't get into that mindset. We can't get hung up with the negativity when we make a mistake. And mistakes happen. I'm not perfect. Just because I wrote these keys and am able to articulate it effectively doesn't mean I don't need them myself. And because I am so driven and so goal-oriented and I work so hard to create my destiny, when I get to an opportunity and I'm on the fence and I know better, but I feel like indulging and I know better, and the chat between my inner curmudgeon and me knowing better gets to be this wrestling match, and finally, you know, the curmudgeon wins, and it's like, you know, when you're working out and that creamy bowl of mashed potatoes looks so good and you know you shouldn't have it, but then you eat it anyway, and then you feel like crud afterward. I mean, I make mistakes too. I am not immune to it, just like you are not immune to the mistakes. But the mistakes don't have to be a death sentence for us. That is the problem that most of us get into, is we get into falling off the wagon and we feel like we've done so good so far, and maybe this is the very first time we've ever come out of our shell and we've ever decided to commit to something, especially something that's so far off and long-term. If you think about financial independence, 1 minute at a time, $1 at a time, like we talked about a millionaire minute, it seems like, oh, I'm never going to get there. So you fall off the wagon, and then you're busy kicking yourself while you're down. I should have never tried this. You allow that curmudgeon to come out and start doing his damage. And that is the pitfall. That's where we get into the problem of what do I do next? And now we say, the guilt overwhelms us. The curmudgeon says, see, you should have never done that, because he doesn't like taking risks. He wants to be safe, and so he wants to keep you safe because he doesn't want you to experience pain. And when there's risk, there's the opportunity for pain. And then the guilt, we're kicking ourselves when we're down. Who do we think we are? We shouldn't have done that. And you cannot allow that to set in. You cannot allow the mistake to overrule and offset all of the good stuff that you've done. Next week is our three R's, review, revise, and recommit. What you must absolutely focus on, you must focus on the fact that this is not about your making a mistake. Remember, what we think about, we bring about. And if we focus on that negativity of that mistake, then it's going to just crush our momentum that we've had. So instead of focusing on the mistake and having the guilt and throwing the pity party and beating ourselves up, what we must remember is to focus on the progress of the process. This isn't about perfection. It's about progress. And if you are slightly like me, who has heavy competition, and I think that that has to do with the way I was raised. And it was just me and my little brother. And my little brother was kind of a mama's boy. And whenever anything happened to him, my mother made me go be the bully, and I had to go beat everybody out that beat up on my little brother. And it actually made it worse. She was trying to make it better, but it actually made it worse because then they just teased him more and all of that stuff. And fortunately, he turned out okay. And I admire my brother, and he's an amazing man, and he is in the Army, and he is an amazing officer and a steward of our community, and he just returned from Haiti, helping organize all of the relief efforts. He is such a good man. But, you know, all of that just forced me to be super competitive. I had to be domineering. I had to be, you know, the one to win. And when you put that on yourself, when you fail, it's because you're trying to live up to some unrealistic level of perfection that you may not ever be able to attain. Mr. Perfect does not exist, ladies, in the dating world. Some of us get fixated on Mr. or Mrs. Perfect. That person does not exist. But Mr. or Mrs. Right certainly does, and I'm living proof because I was looking for Mr. Perfect, and my first husband never messed up, measured up. But when I changed up what I was looking for and I made my goals more realistic and in line with what was achievable, I found Mr. Right. And the same thing goes here. Yes, we said that we wanted to save $100 this month, if that was our goal, to set aside $3 a day. And, well, we only got like 27 of those dollars because, you know, we had an unexpected visitor, and then we went out to the mall, and then we saw this perfect pair of shoes we had to have and this, that, and the other thing. And so before we know it, we were supposed to have $100 saved. That was the goal, but we didn't make it. Now we're killing ourselves over it. That's silly. Because just because we missed the 100, that doesn't mean don't recognize the value of the 27. This isn't about perfection. This is about progress on the process. And if we can create some progress on the process, that's where we are going to win long term. Because it's not about who finishes first. It's about who gets to the end of the road. And we have to remember, and so many people forget this, that it's about the journey. It's not about the destination. And if you think about it, it's a lifelong journey, because do you realize where the destination is? The destination isn't retirement, because we still have financial commitments and lives and objectives. The destination is when we get to be put 6 foot under. So our time horizon isn't about to retirement or to 40 or to 50. It's to the end of our lives. So we have all that time to amass wealth, and we need to focus on the progress of the process.
So, Stephen, your homework for this week, and I guess because this isn't about being perfect every time, and because the idea is to forget the perfection principle and focus on the progress of the process and know that even though we might not be 100% where we are, we're probably further ahead of where we would have been had we not started this process. So we're going to make sure that we commend ourselves when we make positive strides, but we're going to learn how to use that accountability process that we went through a couple weeks ago. And when we recognize that we've made a mistake, we're going to short circuit that pity party. We're going to stop the pity party. We're going to say, okay, I goofed up, but I'm not going to beat myself up about it. And then replace those feelings of anxiety or guilt or punishment or whatever we're experiencing at that moment, and we're going to replace them with those thoughts of accountability. When I was in control and I had felt good about what I had just accomplished and it was all because of me, and we're going to instill those accountability feelings, just like how we do our affirmations to retrain our brain to stop focusing on the bad event that just occurred. We can either use our accountability process at that time, or we can use our affirmation list. So do you think that as we move forward that you can start employing those techniques?
Oh, I definitely will do that, and look forward to doing it and seeing how much more progress I can make in the next week.
That's so great, because that is what we are trying to accomplish. So, for our nuts and bolts for this week, our key statement is, I know that attempting perfection can have a paralyzing effect on my ability to create financial wealth. Therefore, I will focus on the progress of the process. Quickly, our affirmation for this week, our key affirmation is, I have learned from my past mistakes, and I now know how to be better in the future. I have learned from my past mistakes, and can be better in the future. Now, for those of you joining us for the first time, we say our affirmations several times throughout the day. The first time we say our affirmations is right before we go to bed. We say our affirmations to train and focus our subconscious mind on bringing the things we want to fruition. And so while we are dreaming and having an incredible night's sleep, our brain will then take it as if it is happening and create new neural pathways. So when we wake up refreshed and revitalized in the morning, we are that much closer to attaining our goals. Then, before we kiss the husband, brush the teeth, let the dog out, we pull out our affirmation list, and we then focus our conscious mind on our affirmations. And we do that because what we think about, we bring about. And we want to be looking at what the higher purpose is for our day. And that is, again, to be focused on what's important to us. And then anytime we encounter negativity, anytime we make a mistake or someone else brings negativity into our lives, because what we think about, we bring about, we're going to say our affirmations one more time. And then, and sometimes I wind up saying them several times throughout the day. So don't be afraid. Have that affirmation list and be prepared to pull it out at any given moment. Your homework is to remember to focus on the progress of the process. Don't worry about what you didn't do. Focus on what you did do right and do more of it. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We have so much more in store coming up for you on Wednesday on the Midweek Update. More Minutes on Your Money, more Millionaire Minute. And then again, another power-packed show, next week's key, review, revise, and recommit, remembering our three R's and how important they're going to be in giving us our accountability for financial independence. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's segment of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Have a wonderful week coming up. We'll chat with you again on Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in, and here's to your financial independence.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.